keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm glad to be back. Hopefully everyone caught our show on Monday. It was a bit all over the place, but, you know, we're here Monday nights, not watching Monday Night Football. I mean, I guess you can give it to us for at least doing that. just joking. I think we had a pretty good show on Monday. Definitely go back and check out all the other shows on UCY and all of our other shows on the Anti-Media Radio Monday through Friday. We have a show here on the same website and the same place, the same time, Monday through Friday, a few different hosts, a bunch of different perspectives, a bunch of different guests. Here on Monday and Wednesdays, we always have a great panel of people, journalists, activists, thinkers, and all kinds of people to, you know, kind of break down the daily news and the weekly news and the overall trends and the geopolitics and all that good stuff. But tonight we're going to be talking about the drug war, because the drug war is one of the most hideous pieces of legislation that has ever existed in the United States. And unfortunately, it's being carried out all over the world as well. And you know, the U.S. empire is one of the main drivers behind a lot of the drug war legislation that is, you know, carried out in many countries. It's not just our own doing. You know, we've for a long time affected the drug war in all the U.N. countries and, you know, all that good stuff. And, you know, that encompasses most of the Western world and a lot of the people in the Middle East and all that kind of thing. Anyway, that's what our show's going to be about tonight. If anybody wants to call in and talk about the drug war, how has it affected you? How do we go about ending it? What are some solutions? You know, what are things that are happening right now that are good? We're going to be talking about all those things. So if you do want to call in and talk about it with us tonight, feel free to join us. 718-717-8296 is the phone number. If you do call in, make sure you keep your mic muted and your radio muted behind you, and we'll come to you by your area code in the order that you call. If not, we will have to hang up on you, because we'll be hearing ourselves talking and it's going to mess up the audio and all that good stuff. That being said, I want to introduce my panel tonight. We have Claire Bernish in the studio. How are you doing tonight, Claire?
I'm doing good.
I think I finally got your last name right.
No, not yet.
Okay, well, it's been, you know, a long time, so I'm working on it. It's pretty simple. It's very similar to mine, so, you know, hopefully it's not
you're
too
not
much
killing
longer.
It.
Yeah, I'm not murdering your last name.
No, not by far.
You know, and I'm not murdering it like the cops murder people all the time over simple things like marijuana and cocaine and other drugs that, you know, for the most part, they're harming themselves. And people die over this stuff, you know, and the drug war isn't just this thing, oh yeah, people go to jail, and, you know, it's bad, and if you get caught, you get slapped on the wrist, you know, No, people die from the war on drugs all the time. They get gunned down because cops raid people's houses because they think they're drug dealers. There was a guy in Florida not too long ago that we covered pretty extensively, and we were working with his friends and family on the story, and you know, he was somebody told the cops that he was a weed dealer, and they kicked down his door, and they ended up shooting the guy in the face and killing him, and they found less than an eighth of weed at his house, which is, you know, for those not in the know, several grams, which is just, a, you know, 20, 30 bucks worth of weed. And the guy died because of it. And all of his friends and family were, you know, basically said, look, he was not a drug dealer. The guy would smoke weed, you know, every now and then, and that was it. He wasn't any drug dealer, and he gunned down because of it. So, you know, the war on drugs is not something that is not... It's not some program or some idea or some policy that is just harmless or that just throws people behind bars. It kills people, a lot of people, and not just here in the U.S., but we're going to get to that a little bit later. I want to introduce the rest of the panel here. We're also joined by my longtime co-host, D.B. Schwartz. What's up, D.B.?
Not much, Nick. Just getting ready to make an epic road trip again, and that's pretty much what I've been focusing on.
Awesome. Claire and I are also getting ready for a big road trip. We're going to be driving out to Houston. We're going to be in Houston by the 20th. I'm not sure what day we're leaving, but we're driving from San Diego out to Houston, and we're going to be going to hang out with Derek Burrows and the Houston Freethinkers at For the Community 10. Anyone that's in Texas or anyone that wants to go out there and participate, it's a two-day festival. It's going to be packed with over 100 bands, I believe it was. Over 100 bands, a bunch of different people speaking. I believe I'm going to be speaking there and giving a short speech on whatever the hell I feel like talking about that day. hopefully it's something good, though, like maybe the drug war, and or, you know, stopping the drug war, should I say. We're also joined by Jake Anderson on the call. How's it going, Jake?
Pretty good, man. Hey, Claire, how's your stay in California going so far?
I couldn't be happier.
Excellent. DB, I'm sorry I'm going to miss you when you're out there in Cali, but Nick, I'm hard at work on a video for the site, and it actually kind of does tie into the drug war.
Awesome, man. That's great news. And DB, I forgot to mention Manny. I'm not sure if Manny's going to be calling in tonight, but he definitely, when you're out here in San Diego visiting, Manny wants to meet up and have a little get-together here at the Anti-Media headquarters. So hopefully we can make that happen while you're here, because obviously we've been sharing radio time for a long time, and he's never met you in person. And, man, I can't wait to at least have you back in studio for at least one episode of the radio show, man. The fireworks will be flying that night for sure. Hopefully everyone can tune in. We saw what happened last time. We were all in the studio together with me, Jake, and Claire. And,
this will be like a special 5-hour episode, then.
Yeah, we'll go 5 hours straight.
This time I'm bringing my own drone, dude.
Yeah, it was so exciting. The NSA wanted to tune in, yeah.
Looking forward to the drone, man. I'm still picking up scraps off the street from the one that crashed out here the other day. Still don't have any answers for what it was and anything. It's gotten really quiet around here regarding that drone.
And you know that spot's getting worse, like where the battery acid was or whatever it was that was on the street? It's actually dissolving the asphalt more.
Yeah, it's
every
like
day.
Creating a sinkhole where the drone fell down and crashed right there. So we're not really...
Didn't you guys just get torrential downpours?
Yeah, we got some great rain last night, man. It was really good. I actually experienced some hail, too, when I was driving. I hadn't experienced that in a really long time. And so that was pretty interesting. And yeah, we've been getting some nice rain and some really nice sunsets and
double rainbow.
Some really cool views and a rainbow outside the headquarters. It was pretty cool, man. They say it's good luck. I mean, hopefully. Anyway, there's some huge news on the drug war today. And yesterday as well, if you go down to the website, theanthemedia.org, you'll see all of our coverage. I mean, it almost seems like yesterday, it's almost like drug war week on the anti-media, because, I mean, I'd say like 60% of our stories that are coming out are related to the drug war in one way or another. We've got two major national stories, in fact, three, that we're going to talk about tonight. The first one is something that Claire covered today regarding Mexico. Mexico's Supreme Court found that prohibition of cannabis is unconstitutional. What can you tell us about that, Claire?
So they're saying that for personal use, as long as you're not a commercial venture, personal use and personal cultivation of marijuana for whatever reason you want, for cannabis, whatever reason you want, is unconstitutional. So this paves the way for the entire nation to basically give up the war on, you know, cannabis there. For recreational use, for medicinal use, Mexico made headlines in September. Their first medical marijuana patient was this 8-year-old girl who had upwards of 400 seizures a day. She was unable to talk. Basically, she was unable to function. So the government relented and let the family use CBD, cannabis oil, to treat her. And it helped her and everything, but it seems like the progress was really quick after that, considering, you know, it's a few months later and the Supreme Court has ruled it unconstitutional to use cannabis how you want to. So this is actually a major breakthrough.
It really is, and you know, Mexico is known for its major issues with drug war violence.
The cartels.
The cartels and all those killings. I believe in Ciudad Juarez, it was a few years back when Mexico had really amped up the drug war at on the U.S.'s request, actually. I think there was something like 40,000 people killed in Ciudad Juarez in 1 year. We're talking about one big major city in Mexico, which also borders Texas, I believe. In one city, 40,000 people were killed, and that was all related to the drug war. That made that single city of Ciudad Juarez more dangerous than Baghdad. You know, and this is all drug war kind of fueled violence, right?
Yes, of course it is. And the best part about this is that legalizing cannabis across the nation will effectively make the cartels impotent. When you take away the government's oversight, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, the police state oversight of any drug, then there's no black market for it any longer. So there's no reason to have the cartels. There's no reason for the violence. There's no reason for all of the junk that comes along with the drug war. And the drug war was instituted for profit in the first place. And you can see that it's only profit that keeps it in place. We have neighbors on both sides of the U.S. that are doing something about this drug war, and yet we still seem somewhat stuck in the dark ages, at least in many of our states.
Yeah, exactly. And now, in Mexico, I think it's been a pretty popular idea for a long time, because I think a lot of the people down there, and from my visits to Mexico, and personal interactions down there, you know, a lot of the people, even the people that you would consider more along the conservative side of things, are pretty open to the idea of at least reforming the war on drugs and at the very, very least taking weed out of it. And I think that that a lot of the people in Mexico have a big problem with what they refer to as the narco gobierno, which is the narco government, the cartel government, more or less. Yeah. And that really is an idea that's pretty popular in Mexico, but that popular feeling is kind of suppressed by the government. And I mean, here in the U.S., we see it with the oligarchy that we have. We watched a great video on it the other day about how kind of, you know, the politicians don't reflect the popular opinion; they kind of just reflect whatever the interests tell them to reflect. And that's the same exact thing in Mexico. And one of the big lobbies down there, it's a foreign government, and it's the U.S. government that tells their government, hey, don't legalize drugs, don't end the drug war, don't do any of this stuff, we need you guys to keep it in place. All these different reasons behind the U.S.'s push to keep these other nations with illegal drugs, or keeping these drugs illegal, but that is one of the major factors. So I think, you know, this Supreme Court decision in Mexico is really just a reflection of the popular opinion, and it's really a positive development, as far as I can tell, because it seems like in North America, it's like now it's country after country is starting to fall to this idea of like, look, we got to start ending this bullshit war on drugs.
Well, it comes down to common sense. I mean, they call it a war on drugs. We know it's not that. But even if you go off the ostensible platform of a war on drugs, it's obviously not working. It's created violence and mayhem and death and, you know, this enormous prison population and everything else. There's no reason for this war on drugs. If nothing else, weed is a plant.
Yeah, and the other thing...
Yeah, but they were paid off for so long. Like, am I coming through here?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, let's go ahead and go to the caller here. We got a caller on the line from 734 area code. How's it going? You're live on the Anti-Media. You want to chime
in? Oh, dude, shit. It's, well, first, let me comment how awesome it is that it's so open here, man, and to join in. So props to that. Yeah, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and yeah, I've been living all around the country, and sorry to interject, guys. It's so corrupt, and like you guys said, it's part of what the politicians are forced to do, you know, and I've smoked bud with politicians' kids and all that shit. They really don't care. They really don't care. All they want to do is wake up in the morning and go serve the servant. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter. And so I don't know. All this stuff, I mean, I'm kind of worried about it just because I fear that there's some sort of ulterior motive, some sort of screen that we're being confronted with. And, I mean, people were dying 2 to 3 years ago just for promoting this shit, just against the cartel. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen. So, I mean, it's a very interesting development, in my opinion. What do you guys think?
Yeah, man. In Mexico, it really is a huge deal. There's a huge opposition to the narco government down there, and people are dying left and right. In fact, it was just over a year ago that 43 students at once got kidnapped and just disappeared because they were standing up to that system. And people remember it as like the Ayotzinapa 43 or, you know, the Mexico 43. There's 43 students just literally up and disappeared. That's just scratching the surface of how many people have basically gone missing, including journalists. Are basically, Mexico is the most dangerous place in the world. One of the most dangerous places in the world for journalists. Now Yemen is coming into play and Syria, but
dude, that's what fucking fascinates me. I mean, it's like everyone's so focused on the Middle East, but guess where the most dangerous place in the world is? You know,
it's definitely one of the most dangerous places, and it's so sad because, you know, Mexico is such a beautiful place and the people there are so wonderful, I think the U.S. plays a major role because we dictate a lot of the policy down there. We have a major leverage in foreign aid and military aid to Mexico. I think it's well over $3 billion a year that we supply to that government in aid in one way or another. A lot of it has to do with military aid, helicopters, Humvees, police gear, and you know, that kind of thing. And so we have several levers of power that we can flex over top of the Mexican government, with the most blatant of which that we've used in Latin America many, many times is regime change. You know, and if the Mexican government ever fell completely out of favor with the U.S. government, you know, there would be regime change in that country relatively quickly. And that's one of the things that we've flexed many times in Latin America, and it all falls in line with the modern Monroe Doctrine. It's something that came about in the 1800s that never really went away. But it has to do with our basically this feeling of American exceptionalism that we're able to dictate governmental policies through the entire Western Hemisphere. And the only two countries that basically never fell subject to the Monroe Doctrine were Venezuela and Cuba. Now, Cuba, obviously, we're starting to see a normalization of you know, ties with them, and hopefully sooner or later the embargo is lifted, you know. But for so long, you know, we see what our policies do to any country that don't fall in line with, you know, the American way of governing. And so Mexico for a long time has basically kind of just, you know, accepted that and said, okay, look, give us a little bit of our own freedom. Let us dictate our own, you know, policies and stuff. But, you know, in the end, we're going to fall in line with what the U.S. says because we don't want regime change. We don't want to lose our power structure and our oligarchy that we maintain over the Mexican people. And we're not going to lose all that just because, you know, we're going to go against the grain with the U.S. But sooner or later, I think with enough popular movements, and in Mexico, you know, we've seen so much of it in the last year, especially following these students that disappeared. Man, there's been massive, massive protests. There's parts of the country, I don't know if many people are aware of this, but there's literally parts of the country in Mexico that have actually more or less broken away from the country, and they've become autonomous zones.
Yeah, it's a complete, it's a complete excellent example of anarchy, man. I mean, that's it right there.
Yeah, and so like there's areas of Mexico that have broken away because they're saying, look, we're no longer gonna put up with this shit, and people have taken up arms down there. And now in Mexico, guns are pretty much banned. You're not allowed. It's illegal to own a gun unless you're a military veteran in Mexico. And but people have found a way to pick up arms, and there's communities, especially down in the state of Guerrero and neighboring states. There's this big movement called the Zapatista movement. And they're kind of pushing for autonomy and stuff like that. And so, you know, this is the pushback that you see from an oligarchy, corrupt government. And, you know, over there, it's a lot more out in the open. The corruption is out in the open. Over here, it's in the U.S., it's like, yeah, everyone kind of knows it's corrupt, but it's hard to see unless you're looking for it. You kind of just live your life, and, yeah, it sucks. You're broke all the time, and rent's expensive, and food's expensive. You don't really know why, but you just know it's kind of like that. But in Mexico, it's a little bit more out in the open. The cops will pull you over and extort you on this. I mean, we live 10 minutes away from Mexico. We go down there every now and then, and, you know, we're no stranger to being dealt with in that fashion. And in a way, I kind of prefer it. You know, it's kind of like, well, at least the corruption here, it's like $40 and gets you out of a DUI. You know what I mean? But
they're not insulting you to your face with some excuse that makes no sense, and you know it's false, but you just – yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. And so, you know, it's a whole different dynamic. But on that note, you know, Mexico is going through some major things right now. This ruling today with the Supreme Court saying that cannabis prohibition is unconstitutional. It's a major win, I think, for the freedom of the people in Mexico. It's going to be a major blow. It's going to wind up being a major blow to the cartels, the cartels are a huge part of the problem because the cartels and the government have more or less fused and become one entity. But outside of Mexico, we also have our neighbors to the north in Canada that are also pretty much the new government coming in has basically made it part of its platform that they are going to legalize marijuana nationally as well. You know, and so that's a whole nother, you know, we're starting to see this dynamic in the U.S. where we're kind of sandwiched in between two countries that are like, okay, we're starting to think with common sense and our government is starting to listen to our people. Now, why is it that the U.S. is coming in last in this case?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think the U.S. is falling in line just right in time. I mean, like, you have Colorado, Washington, Alaska. You have the impending vote, which failed in Ohio, unfortunately. I mean, it's coming to fruition. I mean, it's places like in Arizona where you have hardliners and you have true conflict where shit goes wild, in my opinion. I was also just going to mention I don't know if all of you guys have seen the Vice documentary on the Romneys in Mexico, but that's like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of them because they're total statists, but the ones in Mexico are just, I mean, they're complete anarchists. They're taking up arms against the shit. They're saying no, and they're literally living in an anarchist compound, so to speak. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think it is a great experiment, you know, and I think it's very much past due time to start experimenting with new philosophies and new ways of you know, dealing with society, man, because we've been in this democracy experiment for, you know, well over 2,000 years, and it's been shown to pretty much produce what every other state sanctioned political philosophy has produced: oligarchy. You know, we've been dealing with oligarchy under different names for, you know, since the dawn of civilization, more or less, and even since
either.
Yeah. I mean, even before that, you know, and. You know, democracy came into place, and this was supposed to be the great, you know, it's a great philosophy, and it is something that's better than monarchy. But in the end, it produces pretty much the same results as monarchy does, which is, you know, you're ruled by a few people that are extremely wealthy, and they pretty much, you become their subjects. They don't listen to you. They do what they want. I mean, that's exactly what the recent studies have shown from, I think it was Princeton, was the most recent one that showed that, look, you know, America is now a republic in name only. It's more or less an oligarchy because of the way that these politicians vote. They vote in line with corporate interests. The corporate interests and the politicians are fused into one giant entity, and they rub each other's backs, and everyone else is kind of a subject to that system, and we all pay into it, and we all get less out than we put in. We all work our asses off and two jobs and school and all this other shit. We get only a little bit of money back. We're all pretty much broke and barely making it by, you know, and that's the average American at this point in time, you know, and it's pretty sad. But I do agree with you that the U.S. is making major moves when it comes to dealing with the drug war. Washington is a great example with fully, you know, recreational cannabis. I think California really set the bar kind of high. I don't want to say too high, but California got the ball rolling on the legalizing of cannabis thing. And this happened in California in the mid-90s. And we've seen a major turnaround in gang violence and you know, economy and all these things with the decriminalization, the defelonization of cannabis possession and things like that, where, you know, we've got a major economic powerhouse in the cannabis industry in California, especially up in the north where they grow it all for the entire country and all that stuff and exported, still illegally, keep in mind. And I'm not going to name any specific places or any specific people that I know that do this kind of thing, but it, you know, it's still done illegally in many ways to get it out of the state and get it into these states where it's still illegal and that kind of thing. But it's a huge economic thing, and it really helps out with the jobs and the you know, bringing wealth and economic activity into the state. But you know, on that note, we got to keep in mind that today we posted a story on the anti-media regarding the head of the DEA, which by the name of Chuck Rosenberg. Obama just put him in power earlier this year because the former head of the DEA was the one that oversaw the Columbia scandal. I don't know if anyone's aware of it, but it was found that we had DEA agents in Columbia having sex parties with prostitutes financed by drug money. No, and I'm not even exaggerating here. This actually happened.
This is not the
and
Onion.
So the yeah, it's this
oh,
is
yeah.
the Onion.
It's
so
been happening since the 70s.
Obama had to sack the DEA head, the former DEA head, and replace him with this new guy by the name of Chuck Rosenberg. And today, he made a statement basically saying that medical marijuana is a joke. Literally, he said, medical marijuana is a joke. And he said, what really bothers me is the notion that marijuana is also medicinal, because it's not. We can have an intellectually honest debate about whether we should legalize something that is bad and dangerous, but don't call it medicine. That is a joke. And this is the guy that's in charge of the enforcement of drug policy in the United States, and this is the way he talks about cannabis. You know,
what a
so
douche.
Yeah, exactly. And so on one hand, I think we are making strides. A bunch of states now, Ohio kind of voted one down.
It's only if the states and small governments take over. When these big fuckers take over, it doesn't matter what side of the left wing or right wing or whatever, it doesn't matter. They're still, like you said, they're going to listen to corporate interests. They're going to listen to their advisors, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as you decentralize, deregulate, that's how it's going to work, you know? And that's part of our beliefs, I believe.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it should come down to much more local control. These federal bureaucrats, you know, they have an agenda and they kind of stick to it. But hey, caller from 734, man, I really appreciate your call.
Dude, thanks so much.
Yeah, man, feel free to call back in. We got another caller on the line that we're going to have to go to.
All right, peace out.
Peace, man. So it's always nice to have callers like that that, you know what the hell they're talking about.
Yes,
and
it is.
In fact, that's like 95% of our callers. The other 5% are people like trying to troll us and stuff like that.
That
doesn't happen too often,
its own,
but
right,
yeah,
but
it is pretty funny still. But yeah, this DEA guy is just completely out of touch with reality. He's just regurgitating a bunch of propaganda talking points.
He also talks about how some of the quote-unquote drugs that are legal already, like, say, alcohol and such, are really dangerous. But he makes no real comment to say that, you know, cannabis is not a dangerous thing, even though it's still Schedule I. He kind of doesn't make the leap.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been plenty of research out there, and I'm sure pretty much everyone has anecdotal evidence of this, which is that cannabis is a lot less dangerous than alcohol. People don't get hopped up on joints and go out and try to beat people up for the most part. Most people
just get stuck at stop signs.
You know, but every now and then there are drunk ass people that go out on a rampage and fight and get in brawls and, you know.
Well, and I got hit head on by a drunk driver on Halloween once. So, you know, personal experience from it. It's alcohol is dangerous because you don't have physical control of your body. You know, I mean, you are losing control of your inhibitions to the point where you don't necessarily have control of what you're doing.
Exactly. But, you know, we've tried that experiment before with the whole alcohol prohibition thing. And, you know, surprise, surprise, here come, you know, all of a sudden there's a mafia that never existed before that. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the same exact thing. You know, we prohibited alcohol. It created a mafia. Now we prohibit drugs and it creates a cartel.
Prohibition as a policy for any sort of personal use substance does not work. I mean, there can be repercussions for, say, going out and drunk driving and causing an accident. That's one thing. But prohibiting the use of anything, in my opinion, particularly after seeing what happened with Portugal and how successful they've been with their decriminalization of all drugs there, if you're doing something for personal use and there are no, you don't have to go to the black market and risk your life to go and get it, you know, it's kind of a live and let live policy, and everything really improves economically, you know, socially, and everything else.
Yeah, exactly. So let me open this up to the panel first, and then we're going to go to our next caller. The caller is from 830. Just be ready. We're going to go to you in a few minutes. We didn't forget about you. We know you're there. So I want to go back to the panel on this because we've covered a lot of ground here. And first I want to go back to DB and get his thoughts, because I know DB's got some pretty strong opinions on the drug war.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to read specific books like Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and you'll see why, you know, there's going to always be this pushback to legalize, because it's literally, quite literally, funding all of our black ops, giving us basically most of our liquidity to do things off the books. And you're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars a year. So much so that I think I brought up recently a report that Peru, which is the world's largest grower of cocaine, was going to start shooting down planes that didn't respond to their Air Force. And the U.S. said if that happened, they were going to pull out all their defense funding. So it's that important to our way of life.
Yeah, and this goes back. I encourage anyone out there listening to check out this movie. It's based on a true story. It's not a documentary, but it's called Kill the Messenger. For those not aware of it, it's about a journalist named Gary Webb, who uncovered basically that the CIA was helping to fund a Central American guerrilla revolution using cocaine money, and the CIA was basically letting them import all the cocaine they wanted and turn the other way, let them do it. In fact, there's accusations that the CIA was, you know, directly helping them do it. Those accusations aren't fully proven, but I mean, for the most part, people have kind of accepted that as fact. But Gary Webb, a journalist who got on the trail of this thing, kind of started exposing it up in I think it was the San Jose Gazette or something like that. One of these smaller newspapers back in the late 80s and things. And he really started showing, you know, what was going on and how it was really starting to fuel the crack bubble and the crack explosion, and how it was negatively affecting, you know, a bunch of communities in the U.S. And then, of course, at the same time, it kind of was an eye-opener to people that said, hey, what the – I thought we were fighting against the war on drugs. Why are we allowing cocaine? Why is the CIA allowing cocaine to like flood into the country? Well, just as you just said, DB, I mean, they were using it for black ops operations. They're using it for CIA, you know, regime change, counter revolutions, right wing revolutions that they were trying to use to overthrow countries in Central America and things like that. And so, you know, the drug war takes a much darker turn when you look at it in that light. Jake, I wanted to come to you real quick before we go to the caller. You got any more thoughts to add to this before we move on?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think anytime the drug war comes up, I think you have to look at, you know, what they have to lose. I mean, DB obviously pointed out the very salient point of how much money they accrue from this, from black ops and whatnot. But then there's also the psychological component of the very obvious reality that they don't want free thinking in this country. And there's almost a war. It's not a war against drugs. It's a war against consciousness, I would say. The freedom to expand your consciousness in different ways. And, you know, that's obviously they have very much of a vested interest in keeping people thinking, thinking in a very controlled way. Not, which isn't to say that, you know, there aren't a lot of crazy people out there in the pop culture world that are kind of, you know, experimenting with drugs and whatnot. But they like to keep us on this track. And yet at the same time, they want to, you know, ban drugs like, you know, psychedelics and things like that that have proven throughout the history of time to expand our consciousness. And yet at the same time, they would want to grant almost immunity to the pharmaceutical companies that are helping to fuel. I mean, obviously, some pharmaceutical companies in America have done some incredible things in terms of certain drugs and whatnot. But they're also responsible for an epidemic of people addicted to painkillers, people addicted to amphetamines. And that can't be overlooked when in a discussion of the drug war, the fact that, you know, something like marijuana could lead someone to spend, you know, 3 decades in prison while, you know, at the same time, these far more dangerous drugs are being, you know, thrown over the counter at every pharmacy in America, while at the same time, you know, alcohol is you know, pretty much poured into our ears the second we turn 21. So I think it's just this gross hypocrisy that is one of the most noxious parts of the drug war, I think.
Yeah, man. I mean, I couldn't agree with you anymore. It's a huge hypocrisy, considering, you know, the fact of the matter is now at this point in time, we reported this last year, legal drugs are taking more lives than illegal ones at this point in time in the United States. You know, more people are overdosing from legal stuff, you know, prescription pills. I mean, I'm not saying that they're prescribed them, but people are taking prescription pills many of times, you know, taken on the black market and things like that. More people are dying from those than they are dying of cocaine or heroin overdoses and, you know, meth and things like that. So it is a major epidemic, and as you said, it's so hypocritical because the pharmaceutical companies are kind of given carte blanche to push whatever drugs they want, no matter how harmful or addictive, and the threshold is getting lowered more and more and more. A report just came out yesterday, the day before, that showed that over 60% of people in the United States are now on prescription drugs of some sort, and I think 1/3 of those are on over 5 different prescription drugs.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big chunk of the population. It's huge. I mean, it's just enormous.
Another statistic for you that I saw that shocked me, which is that America consumes 75% of all pharmaceuticals in the world.
Wow, dude, that's...
I double-checked it because I couldn't believe it. Our country consumed 75% of the world's pharmaceutical prescriptions.
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
You know, and you know, the threshold is being lowered. We just found out that, or I think it was it the FDA? It was either FDA or USDA. I keep mixing these up because they have so much of an overlapping.
The USDA oversees the FDA. So.
Oh, okay.
It's
a bureaucracy on top of a bureaucracy.
Yeah, exactly.
The FDA basically just said it's okay to start prescribing OxyContin to these young teenagers. What, up to 11? I think it was.
Yeah, 11 or 12.
12?
I mean,
and you know that is horrendous. We reported last year that they now have over 10,000 toddlers in the United States. The number now is probably even higher. It's probably up to 12, 13,000, maybe even 15. They've got over 10,000 toddlers in the United States on ADHD medicines, many of which, in fact, most of which are amphetamine-based. So, you know, we're talking about having kids that are under 5 on amphetamines. You know, and this is it is absolutely
disgraceful.
Kind of insane. I mean, I guess you know, sometimes there are kids that have these really major mental, you know, issues that they're just you can't control it in any other way. But to think that we have children, toddlers, on amphetamines, that's pretty crazy when you consider the fact that we have a war on drugs on cannabis, a plant that grows pretty much naturally that has never been shown to kill anybody and is relatively not addicting. And people get shot in the head for that kind of thing and get thrown in jail. And there was, you know, people literally facing life in jail over these arcane marijuana charges. Yeah, maybe they were trafficking or distributing. But it's a goddamn plant, dude. And at the same time, they're letting these pharmaceutical companies push this stuff down on kids. And it is a huge hypocrisy. Now, the good news is that we are starting to make a little bit of headway when it comes to the drug war in the United States. Obviously, we've got, you know, California leading the way back in the 90s saying, look, we're not going to criminalize personal use of marijuana and we're going to allow medical use of it. And now you got states like Washington and Alaska and Colorado, and I think even D.C. now allows recreational use. So, you know, these are positive signs. But we're starting to see positive developments in the harder drugs too, because there's a place out in Massachusetts. I have a really bad problem pronouncing the city name. What is it called?
Gloucester.
Okay, there's a place called Gloucester, Massachusetts, that is now taking a whole new approach when it comes to heroin addiction. And Claire's written about this, and yesterday Carrie posted an article about this as well. But there's been several updates, and it's a really, really positive news. And I think Claire's going to tell us a little bit about it.
It's a really good success story. The police chief in Gloucester, basically on a whim, was on Twitter and he had his hands tied. He felt like he was helpless. His city was seeing this enormous rise in opiate addiction, like heroin addiction, and
opiate prescriptions.
And he didn't know what to do, and he kept seeing young people die, and it was killing him. So he kind of threw his hands up in the air and said, what do I do? And he ended up starting this program where addicts can come in and bring their, you know, their supplies, their kits or whatever. They can bring their drugs. If they come into the police department themselves in person and say, I need help, then the cops will not arrest them. They won't press charges. They won't do anything but actually get these people help and actually help them quit being addicted to opiates, which are incredibly harmful.
Yeah, and when he made this announcement, I remember it went viral, and you covered it right away. We covered it on the anti-media because, you know, the drug war is such a big topic to us because we feel like it is such a huge injustice and it's such a huge problem, and it just doesn't – it only makes the problem worse. Addiction is a major problem no matter, you know, what addiction we're talking about, whether it's gambling, alcohol, cigarettes – you know, drugs, all the, you know, it's a major, addiction is a major problem, right? And, you know, so we've been covering this, but like, you know, the drug war has been kind of not helping addiction problems at all because they don't treat it as a health issue. They treat it as a criminal issue. And that's exactly what this police chief did is he said, you know what, from now on in my town, we're going to start treating addiction as a health issue and not as a criminal issue. And it went viral like overnight.
Well, he actually, what he said is actually really pertinent to the entire issue of the drug war, because what he says is Chief Campanello, the war on drugs is over and we lost. There is no way we can arrest our way out of this. We've been trying that for 50 years. We've been fighting it for 50 years, and the only thing that's happened is heroin has become cheaper and more people are dying. And I mean, that just sums it up.
Yeah, you know? And he's so right. Now, what's great about what he did, and keep in mind, I think the original announcement came in June, and he started implementing it right away. And they've already started seeing positive results from this program. They've seen a drop in crime. They've seen a major drop in overdoses. They've seen a drop in addiction. I mean, across the board, they've seen basically all positive results. And other departments are starting to see this. And now this idea is actually starting to catch on.
It's the best part. I mean, it worked so well in this small town that people were coming from. I mean, when I originally wrote about it, addicts had come from as far away as California to have this happen. So obviously there's a need for this in the country. And other departments around the country are now picking up on the exact model. And they have started a nonprofit called, I believe it's the Angel Foundation. And it helps departments set up the same sort of program in their towns. So this is becoming like kind of a nationalized issue. It's becoming a way to solve this problem, which is rather amazing when you consider it's the police departments doing this.
So now, according to John Rosenthal, the co-founder of the Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative, which I think is the nonprofit you were talking about, there's almost 40 departments in 9 different states that are now taking on at least portions of this program, and there's over 90 different departments that are interested in getting involved in this. So, I mean, we're talking about this thing started in, like, June, and now it's becoming a national type of movement, and you know, it's a real sea change. It's a real change in philosophy and consciousness to the way we treat addiction and treat all these different things.
It's also the police fighting back against part of the system that they don't believe in.
Exactly, you know, and I think a lot of the cops understand, you know, they've been fighting this drug war since the moment they became a cop, and they've seen how it just is destructive for the most part. You know, there probably are a few success stories here and there about the drug war, and yeah, they saved a family from their crazy heroin addict husband or whatever, and you know, every now and then, yeah, there probably is a success story, but overall, I mean, all we see is just a huge uptick in prison population. There's no reduction in addiction, a huge increase in criminality, and just people getting ending up in the court systems and all that stuff, you know. And so I think this program is showing the it's only been a few months. We're already seeing huge positive signs. I think it's going to start catching, you know, getting traction all around the country. And so this is something that's really, really positive. So I think we are making moves in the right direction. And I think the main thing driving this is just people all around the world or all around the country starting to realize, look, these ideas aren't working. The drug war is a failed experiment. It's being carried out in most countries, and it's failing. And so now it's time to start rolling it back to the point, sooner or later, I don't know when it's gonna be in the next 10 years, hopefully, the drug war will come to a complete end. And we're going to start seeing something maybe a little bit more like what Portugal has been doing to replace it, and something to deal with, you know, addiction as a health issue and not as a criminal issue. Now, I do want to go to our caller here. You've been waiting very patiently. We have a caller from the 830 area code. Thank you for waiting on the line. How's it going? You're live now. You want to join this conversation?
Yeah, what's up, man? It's Cassius.
Hey, what's up, bro? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, man, except I'm kind of heated because I just found out that a carcinogen is in my city's water supply, and they covered it up for like 2 straight years. They've been doing an experiment on Sacramento's water supply with this chemical that's supposed to get solid particles in the river water to be more efficiently taken care of. So basically they put this experimental chemical in the water, just like in Flint, Michigan, the same chemical, and it didn't work, so they pumped in more chlorine into the water to like substitute that or something, and then it made a chemical reaction and mixed into this kind of chemical that is a DPB, and I just found out that they've been covering it up for 2 years. It's broke, and my family drinks this water, you know, they wouldn't listen to me when I suggested that they get, like, you know, non-fluoride water and stuff. I drank it for almost the whole time, too. I couldn't really, like, I couldn't afford water that much before it. But anyway, I also have something to contribute about the pharmaceutical mention that really kind of caught my ear. I've personally known a lot of people of my generation who've had experiences with such things as forced medication. When I went to Olympia, Washington a few months ago, I met this girl who was a friend of a friend. She's 18 years old. She was forced to take Prozac in prison, or maybe in jail, I don't know. But she was locked up for a year because she tried to steal her clothes back from an ex-boyfriend, right? She's 18. She went to jail and she was forced to take Prozac because I think she went hysterical or some situation like that. Maybe she had like a breakdown or something like that. So they gave her Prozac. They forced her to take it for a year. And then immediately upon getting out, she got addicted to heroin, which she never tried because she couldn't handle the depression from quitting the antidepressant. My mom has been on Prozac for 20 years and I've been doing everything I can to get her to quit. And she has MS, and she has to take these injections of this MS drug, multiple sclerosis drug, I think because of the pharmaceuticals that she's had to take her whole life. I've looked into this a lot, and I personally have a huge, huge moral responsibility that I feel to oppose these pharmaceutical drugs that are proven to be terrible things, these SSRI antidepressants. That's one of the things I'm most passionate about. So mentioning that, it's just, it's crazy, you know. I think that's a serious issue we have to focus on.
So, just, Cassius, you know, I want to get your opinion, man. How do you feel about the drug war, the state of the drug war? I mean, of course, all the horrible things going on, but at the same time, you know, the positive, the positive updates that we're starting to get. One, we got several weeks ago with Canada's new government sweeping into power, promising to end the war on cannabis. Mexico just ruled that the prohibition of cannabis is unconstitutional. And then you got these police departments around the U.S. that are starting to treat addiction as a health issue. I mean, where are we really suffering on the drug war, and where do you see some positive outcomes?
I think that the most positive outcome that we can have is just by paying close attention to what's going on and to make sure that a victory really is a victory. And if it is a victory, then to celebrate it to the fullest, you know, and just, you know, take it for what it is. I think it's, I feel like you've covered most of, like, the background information of this issue. So the thing that I can contribute to this discussion is, I think that that if we're talking about solutions to this, legalizing cannabis, this horrible prohibition coming to an end, I think that we should just, you know, be critical about what we take as a victory and what we consider, like, not a victory. You know, some people say that, you know, it's great that we're getting, or the government is getting tax revenue from cannabis, and some people are using this reasoning of tax revenue, this reasoning as a reason for, you know, why cannabis should be legalized. But, you know, I think that that's a terrible reason, because we don't benefit from the tax money, in my opinion. So, I don't know. I think that we should just really closely examine every bill that seeks to apparently legalize cannabis. I think that we should push for true legalization and not, you know, regulations that benefit the state, not overtaxing cannabis. I think that we should just be critical about how we push for this legalization, you know?
Yeah, man, I agree with you. And, you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm pretty much against the regulation of cannabis, and it's kind of sad that a lot of the cannabis movement, it's like I see a lot of the whole tax and regulate cannabis, and that's like, you know, but I guess that is kind of a stepping stone towards legalization, because you get the people that are kind of skeptical. It's like, oh, well, I guess if we're going to tax it and supposedly use the money for schools, then you get all the liberals involved and like, okay, yeah, I could support that and stuff. And that's fine, you know. And I guess, you know, I guess that's kind of a stepping stone. To me personally, I'm like, you know what, dude, just decriminalize this shit. Don't throw people in jail for it, and like leave it out, leave it to its own, because nobody's dying from it right now. We don't need to regulate it, you know. No one's dying from it. We just leave it alone, you know. And that's where I come from. But you know, I can see why people take the stance that they do of the whole taxation and regulating of cannabis, because you know it is a middle ground for the people that are kind of, you know, on the fence about it. One country that I forgot to bring into this conversation. And this may be the biggest news of all, because, you know, Mexico has ruled cannabis prohibition unconstitutional, and Canada is saying that we're going to, you know, legalize cannabis. Ireland now, on the other hand, Ireland, which is over there, I'm sure everyone knows where Ireland is. Hopefully, if you're listening to this show, you know a little bit of geography. You know that it's right by the, it's right by England. It's an island out there in Europe. Ireland is moving to decriminalize all drugs. And so this is a major, major development in the war on drugs. And we're not talking about just cannabis and, you know, maybe just Molly or ecstasy or MDMA, whatever you want to call it. We're talking about cocaine, heroin, even including meth. And we all know meth is probably the most horrible drug out there, and it's nasty. But at the same time, keeping it illegal has not helped end the addiction to it at all. So it looks like Ireland is getting ready to introduce a program that's going to make it pretty much, you know, for personal use, for possession and using it. They're going to decriminalize it all.
Well, I imagine they probably looked to Portugal and saw the incredible success that Portugal had with this. And, you know, if you're using common sense, there's no denying that this model could work. Why wouldn't they try it? Why aren't we trying it, for that matter?
Exactly. And so this is a major development. And this is an entire country falling to this idea of, you know, ending the drug war. You know, by all means, it's ending the drug war. It's still going to, you know, they're still going to get the dealers probably and prosecute them and the distributors and stuff like that. But by all measures, this is a pretty much, Ireland is pretty much done with the drug war,
yeah,
as we know it. You know, and so this is a big deal. And, you know, I'm excited to see the results and see the data that comes out. And, of course, it's something that we can take in over here in the U.S. And, of course, I'm sure we have people listening all around the world as well. But for the most part, most people listening tonight are in the U.S. And, you know, we all have our opinions on that and all that thing. But you know, this is something that we can look to and see maybe a year down the line and look at the studies that come out and the data that comes out from this and use that as more ammunition for our cause to start, you know.
We need to leverage the laws and actually get the laws changed. At least while we have this model of government in place, we need to, you know, play by the rules that they give us. We look to the other countries that have had so much success, or even our own cities like Gloucester that are having so much success with, you know, degrees of legalization or decriminalization, you know, depending. And there's no reason we can't change policy to match. I mean, when you change policy to match the social mood, it usually follows that you'll have a boom, like, economically speaking. So why wouldn't we do this?
Yeah, and so, you know, on that note, so anyone wanting to look further into Ireland, we have a article up on the antimedia.org called Another Nation to Decriminalize Drugs, Including Heroin and Cocaine. On that note, bringing it back here to the domestic front, California actually, I believe it was last November, passed a proposition called Prop 47, which in effect did the same thing. It defelonized all personal drug possessions. So in California, in theory, you can be pulled over, as long as you're not driving under the influence, you can be pulled over in California and have a bag of heroin on you, and even utensils to use it, and you walk away with a ticket in California, according to Prop 47, which went into law last November. But according, yeah, of course, this is theoretically speaking, because according to the latest research that I've done on Prop 47, it's a law that passed, and the majority of Californians supported it, but it's not being implemented, really. And so what we're seeing is that there's a law in the books that says, look, drug possession is no longer a felony in California. It doesn't matter what drug you have. It's not a felony, and you're not going to go to jail for it. People are still going to jail for drug possession in California. And so this is a major issue here, is that the popular opinion already spoke. The people already spoke here. And the law's already on the books. But the cops aren't enforcing it, and I don't think it's may not be because the cops think it's not a good idea, but more like because there's other interests in play that are kind of saying, hey guys, let's just go ahead and pretend this law doesn't exist and keep enforcing these laws so that we can keep filling up these prisons, you know. And I think this is what's going on, and this is something that we haven't talked about too much. I know Jake touched on it just a little bit, but the prison industry is huge in the U.S. when it comes to keeping this war on drugs going, and California has a huge prison industry, man. Probably the biggest in the country. And the private prisons, the prison unions, they all flood the pockets of these politicians. They are one of the most powerful lobbies that are in favor of the drug war. They can't be ignored. These are another part of the problem, the whole money and politics thing. It's a huge issue. It helps keep the drug war in place. So, you know, bringing it back to a bigger level here, addressing the money and politics issue will help us beat the drug war too. You know, and so I'll leave the show at that. Thank you all for tuning in. Yo, here we go. Go. Radio, the stereo. Peace out.